Okay, if I could interrupt your conversations, please. You did a great job, lots of great ideas into the computer. But please close down your conversations so that the panel can again begin, and they will start by responding to some of your key questions. Okay?
Okay, I think we're going to start. We can tell from the questions that you submitted to us that you're a lively group, and it's probably hard to stop this conversation. But we're going to try our best to answer a suite of questions that you sent to us. And we got quite a few that were focused on the next stage of negotiations. And the general gist of them appeared to be, in the coming climate change negotiations, how do we assure that avoided deforestation is credited as a climate change measure? And some have asserted that since avoiding deforestation is good for the climate, the poor, and wildlife, maybe those carbon credits should be considered more valuable rather than less valuable than other carbon credits. So to continue the discussion we began on negotiation and that you all were clearly involved in, I'm going to ask first Stu and then Government Braga to comment on these questions.
Well, the first thing is education is crucial, and having this panel at the Global Clinton Initiative to elevate the issue is very important. But here are concrete things. Number one, we have to make sure that carbon markets include forestry credits. Nicholas Stern for the UK estimated that to have a 50% reduction in the rate of deforestation, you would need capital flows of around $15 billion per year. Some estimate twice that much. That cannot be done by foreign direct assistance. It has to be done by private capital through carbon markets and making sure that forestry projects are credited in a post-Kyoto treaty, just like other credits. Second, you can deal with the environmentalists' concerns about measurement, additionality, and permanence by something called a national baseline approach, in which a country measures its rate of deforestation. And then at the end of a given period of time, if it demonstrates that it has reduced that rate of deforestation, it gets credits which it can trade. This is a way in which you can begin to get developing countries involved. And contrary to what we had in Kyoto, where China and India not only wouldn't take commitments themselves, they refused to permit us to include in Kyoto the opt-in by developing countries that wanted to participate. Now, this Monday, Brazil and 11 rainforest countries announced that they want rainforests included in a post-Kyoto treaty. Fourth is capacity building. You've got to be able to develop the capacity, which Brazil already has, it's one of the best in the world, to be able to measure what your forests are, what's the baseline from which you start. Most countries, even if they want to do that, don't have that capacity. The World Bank is going to announce a new facility to fund that, but that's something that's very important. Next is early action credits. Now, we can't wait till 2012 and have more forests raped and ruined. We have to be able to say that in 2012, in the next phase, if you have taken early actions now, you'll get credit for them. Otherwise, I said we've lost 7 years, we'll lose another 4 years waiting until 2012. And then next is the role of the private sector. I'm associated with three institutions that demonstrate what can be done. Sustainable Forestry Management, I'm on their advisory board. They are purchasing forestry assets and creating credits that can be sold. Second, the Chicago Climate Exchange is making an announcement shortly after this panel of the first registered forestry credits on any regulated exchange. It's something in Bolivia. It's very exciting. It's hundreds of thousands of hectares that will be protected. And third, Coca-Cola is going to announce also right after this panel that they are going to do a project in Brazil in the Atlantic rainforest in which it will be a forestation project with nurseries and the like to make sure that we not only incentivize avoided deforestation, but that we not take our eye off the need to reforest those areas that have been cut. So they are leading the way, and it's very important with the private capital we have in the Global Clinton Initiative to recognize this can be profitable, it's a good investment, and it will give you credits which you will need when there is an obligatory and mandatory program in the United States, which there will be, to begin to trade.
Thank you very much. Governor Braga, how should avoided deforestation be built into the post-2012 regime?
Well, first of all, I think we have to make sure that the forest will be included in the second round of Kyoto Protocol. Because at that time, as the ambassador was saying, that they mistake because they say that the natural forest didn't capture carbon. Now the scientists and all the studies prove that the preserved forest capture the carbon, but we need to be paid for this service to preserve and conservate more and more the protected area. And as I said, we need to take from the papers to the field the conservation of those protected areas by the rainforest. Second, I think it's very, very important to understand that the partnership between private sector and public sector will be much important to get good results. We have a partnership with Coca-Cola in Amazonas a long years ago, and with this partnership, a lot of rural communities has been provide of jobs and opportunities in economic stance, and maybe others companies could come and make some kind of partnerships in this sustainable development program. And the other point is, in my point of view, we need to have support to funds like this one. The Amazonas State has already structured, and who wants to help as a philanthropy or as an investor should look by internet in amazonas.am.gov.com and see what we have structured by law and structured by fund to help conservation, the nature, and also to give opportunity to the people who live by there.
So we're hearing early action, money, partnerships, real afforestation, reforestation, and prevented deforestation. We had a whole series of questions around the valuing of ecosystem goods and services. And so I'd like to pose to Mr. Tottenbach and Dr. Goodall, what is the gap between what can be earned from logging a tropical forest versus the value of those forest services, and how do we tackle that issue? So, Franz, you want to go first?
Okay. Well, it depends, yes, how do you log it. If there is bad logging and there's clear cutting, then the price is going to be maybe even less because that's a cheating kind of logging. It is the certified logging or the label logging, the one that probably is more expensive even, and that's the one that might need some carbon offset. So, but the thing maybe is that we are obviously coming to a place in which we need to bring all the value of the forest to save it, all the values. And when I mean all the values, biodiversity has to be brought in as well. And protecting local cultures have to be brought in as well. And water services have to be brought in as well. So there are many other services. I think it's not either or. I would like to think maybe that, you know, forestry carbon is more fun carbon. It's a lot more to do with it. You can develop other markets. You can develop biodiversity markets. Because you can earn your forestry carbon in any forest. But the fun will be to know which forest, where to allocate, where is more valuable, where can you do better, for which communities, for what biodiversity. So it's a lot more for the markets in forestry carbon. But that's not only about markets, I think, in life. So probably you would like something to say, Jane, about this.
We kind of switched over here from the original plan because you said everything I was going to say. So, no, So anyway, what I thought I would say, which I desperately want to say, and which I feel is terribly, terribly important, is the value of education, so that we don't have people in Congress in 20, 30, 40 years' time who don't understand absolutely about all the issues we've been discussing. And I find that traveling around the world, that there are so many people who simply, they just don't understand. And one of these issues is biofuel. I remember, I can't remember how long ago it was, when President Bush said, now America's going green, and the big answer was biofuel. And we already have examples from tropical forests where the threat of biofuel is, could spell the doom for the tropical forest. For example, in Indonesia. Now, vast areas of the tropical rainforest have been cut in order to grow oil nut palm for biofuel. And the orangutans are hanging on by a thread, one of our closest living relatives, that could actually vanish from the face of the earth, let alone, as you say, the cultures and all the forest services going. And in Uganda, we only just saved a large area of forest, which actually was preserved forest, from being sold off for sugarcane for biofuels. And so it's just terribly important for people to understand that biofuel as such isn't the answer to everything. It depends what it comes from. It depends where it comes from. And all of this means a lot more education than the general public is getting. It's just that information isn't really out there. It's in bits and pieces. It's not clear. And I believe that this is really important.
Absolutely. Education is important. And as an educator, I would say that this generation coming through is very, very worried about their future, and their dedication to finishing the job that our generation will not finish is very great. And so I have great hopes for that. And I agree with you completely. Education is very key. I see our gem man cometh. So I'm going to give David Sandelow the chance to tell us the gems that he has distilled from all your great thoughts.
Thank you, Rosina. I think in response to our question about three top priorities, I think it's fair to say we got seven top priorities. So I will report them to you. By far, the comment made most was in the area of passing domestic cap and trade legislation that would have credits for something related to avoided deforestation or protecting forests, which is a theme, of course, from our first session, too. A lot of comments about helping developing countries enforce laws and protect national forests, and that the amount of illegal logging is a theme that didn't come out in the first section of this discussion and is something that was clearly discussed at a lot of the tables. Discussion third about harnessing technology, both satellite tracking, GIS, and then also using technology to track wood products. I think a fourth set of priorities gathered around setting clear standards for measurement and monitoring, and that this is a key issue for forests. Ensuring that traded wood is produced sustainably, and then we got a lot of comments along the line of the point that Jane Goodall just made about making sure that biofuels are produced sustainably. And then a final priority people talk to is ensuring local people benefit, especially the poor. So a lot of ideas out there. In terms of CGI commitments, somebody suggested that every CGI member should commit to purchase only certified sustainably purchased wood. And that would have a lot, that had a very powerful impact. Several suggestions for major new financial contributions. I'm not sure if they came from the people who would be writing the checks or not. But pointing to projects in the Congo in particular, the Amazon, Indonesia, and other places where the projects are in place and what's needed is funding. Suggestions that CGI members could come together to start a job creation program so that people have alternatives to logging in different places. Enhancing public awareness with a CGI effort. Supporting tools to measure forest cover. We have CGI members who are very involved with satellite mapping and tracking, and they could do a lot of good in this area. We had somebody suggest that all tour operators should charge a conservation surcharge. And then an interesting idea, I thought, building on work that's happened to build on the mayors supporting Kyoto here in the United States, maybe creating a network of mayors to support forest protection at the local level around the world. Those are your ideas. Congratulations. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you. I'd like to pick up on the issue of financing, since obviously that is very key, and ask our panelists to comment on what role businesses and philanthropies can play, both in the United States, developing countries, and developed countries around the world. And perhaps, Stu, you would like to comment on that?
Well, as I mentioned, this effort cannot be done by foreign assistance. There's not enough of it. It has to be done by providing capital flows in the private market. And the way to do that is to make sure that in any U.S. legislation and in a second stage Kyoto Treaty, that there's full fungibility, full crediting for forests. I mean, I hear in the Congress, well, maybe we'll include it, but we'll should give a discount and reduce it because you can't really depend on the integrity of these credits. Well, with satellite imagery, you can. With the kind of measurement program that Brazil already has, you can. Mm-hmm. With a national baseline approach, you can. So it's really critical. I'm telling you right now that if Congress tomorrow passed a cap and trade bill, it probably would not include anything on forests. Zero. That's how far we have to go in educating. Now, on the private sector can participate in many ways through the carbon market system, through the kinds of projects which I mentioned Coca-Cola and Sustainable Forestry Management and the Chicago Climate Exchange are doing, by engaging with developing countries with tropical forests, investing, putting money up, and getting credits for that. I mean, it's a good thing to do, but it also will be a profitable thing to do because these credits that you'll obtain are tradable. They're tradable on the Chicago Climate Exchange. They're going to be tradable if we can change. Here's another thing. It is remarkable that the Europeans, under initial pressure from environmentalists before they really appreciated the importance of the forestry issue, even though afforestation and reforestation are permitted already under Kyoto, Rosina, the European trading system, which is the biggest in the world, forecloses any trading of any kind in any forest products, not just avoided deforestation, but even what Kyoto already allows in reforestation and afforestation. So that ban has to be repealed. Merkel and Chancellor Merkel and others want to do that. So we've got so much homework to do on this that it's staggering, but getting the word out, getting the private sector engaged is critical, and recognizing you can do good, you can do well, you can be profitable by these kinds of investments.
In many ways, I think, Stu, as you said, we've lost sort of a decade on some of these issues, and we really need to get doing our homework now. In continuing the discussion of what financial markets can help with, would you like to discuss how things like intellectual property rights can be used to protect forests and the role of other investments in pharmaceutical industry, for example, Governor Braga?
Well, this is a huge challenge right now in Brazil. We are discussing that inside of Brazil about the biocosmetics rights in rainforest, and maybe this is a new frontier to have a sustainable development program in the Amazonas state and then the whole region. And maybe this is a door or a window of opportunity. But I would like to say here once again, I have been working with the people in my state the last 25 years. And what I learned from them is that the poverty and the leak educations are the key drivers of deforestation. So if we want to conserve the forest, we need to invest in developed systems which are sustainable. And we need to invest in education. Because if we don't build a new model of development in that region, which has almost 16% of the whole rainforest and the whole global rainforest in our state, it will be impossible. Because the first law for the man is survival. And don't ask it for one who is starved to keep one tree standing. And I don't believe there is a smart thing for all the smart investors and companies all over the world doesn't understand that, because that will cost a lot. Mm-hmm. Will cost a lot in the climate change, will cost a lot in the global warming, will cost a lot for the companies, for the profits, for the stockholders, for everyone. So if we want to change things in the next years, we must invest now. Not in 2012, but now, since now. And sometimes the government, and I can say that because I'm a governor, doesn't work as hard as should. So the private sector and the non-organizations, societies could help a lot to face the poverty and the leak educations and those forests.
Thank you. Amazingly, our time is almost up again, and I would like to ask Mr. Tottenbach and Jane Goodall to offer some last comments on missing tools that you think we need in our toolkit as we move forward to protect tropical forests.
Missing tools we need in our toolkit. Well, let me perhaps relate to the concept of how to deal with the incentives. It seems to me that we are not, it was said this morning that we are burning and putting our carbon in the atmosphere. And this seems obviously that comes from two sources, the locked carbon on below the Earth and on top of the Earth. On the top of the Earth is kind of green, it's kind of full of biodiversity and life. On the bottom is kind of, you know, dark, dead. It's called, I think, fossil fuels. It seems kind of weird that we are trying to we miss to connect the two. We are burning at the same rate almost, one with the other, 20% emissions coming from live carbon, and you know, transportation is a little bit less than 20% total emissions. And we are seems to want to save the dead carbon, and we are not connecting it with the live carbon. There is like a misconnect there. What is it, a business misconnect? What is happening? I guess I didn't give you any tool, but that's a thought.
Very good thought. And Jane, we give you the last word.
Well, the last word, I'm not sure that this is a tool either. But I think thinking of what the panel has been talking about and thinking about the questions and the ideas that come from the audience, one of the most important things in this whole issue and any of the issues that the Clinton Global Initiative is considering this week is the state of the planet, the future of the human species, and the future of life on Earth. And I think we all must recognize that we have reached a point in time when if we don't act now, if we don't roll up our sleeves, then it's going to be too late. We are on a downward trajectory. Fortunately, all around the planet, there is a new awareness. I mean, people have finally agreed what we've been saying for a long time, that global climate change actually is real. And the Stern report, I think, really clinched that. But, you know, from traveling as I do around the world, talking to young people who've lost hope, young people who say you've compromised our future and there's nothing we can do about it, it's the political will to act. But over and above that, it's each one of us realizing that what we do does make a difference. We do have an impact on global climate change in our own lives, not just in big business. And if we care, if we're passionate, if we realize time is running out, then if we get together now, it's not too late. And that's why things like the Clinton Global Initiative are so important, because it brings together people who do care, people who are prepared to help. And I have to end with one comment. I said it last night, but I'll say it again, because I think the time has come when we are prepared to take action. It was at the Millennium Peace Summit of religious and spiritual leaders at the United Nations, and one of the indigenous people gathered there from nine nations, he stood up. He was the head of the Eskimo Nation in Greenland. And he said, "Brothers and sisters, I have a message for you from the north. Up in the north, we know every day what you people are doing in the south. Up in the north, the ice is melting. what will it take to melt the ice in the human heart? And I believe the ice is melting. And strangely, it's the idea of the globe warming that seems to be melting not only the ice in the north, but the ice in the human heart, so that we can get together and make a difference, because we must.
Thank you. Dr. Goodall, you taught us that chimpanzees know how to use tools, and we can only hope that humans, too, know how to use all the tools that this group has put together for us today to save this planet. So thank you. I want to now call up Bill Riley, who has served in so many roles to save the planet as Direct Administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, President of the World Wildlife Fund, and the senior advisor now to Aqua International, to announce commitments that people have made to move forward on preventing deforestation. Bill?
Okay. Starting with the Coca-Cola Company, would Brian Smith, president of Coca-Cola Brazil, and Tom Lovejoy, president of the Heinz Center, come up? Be recognized for a... this is a commitment to rehabilitate 3,000 hectares of the environment, protect the biodiversity, and restore ecosystem benefits in the eastern forest, the Atlantic rainforest of Brazil, where something less than, 10% of the original forest stand remains. Through the creation of 150 jobs and other sources of value associated with this reforestation effort, the commitment also aims to mitigate poverty affecting local communities. This will entail a reduction of 300,000 tons of CO2 over 5 years, and very importantly, improve the watershed and the biological diversity of this area. And the commitment of $13.5 million over 5 years is complemented by a second Coca-Cola commitment, CGI commitment, of $6.2 million associated with planting 30 million trees in Mexico. Great job, support. Thank you, my pleasure. Okay. The Center for International Forestry Research, CIFOR, Francis Seymour is the Director General. Would you join me on the stage? And this is a commitment to ensure that avoided deforestation in a post-Kyoto global climate protection regime is informed by high-quality, independent research. $6 million over 3 years. In light of the post-Kyoto global climate protection regime, C4 will launch a climate change and forest initiative, and it will produce independent analysis of options for including avoided deforestation into national and international climate policies, help answer some of the questions we just labored at our table. And also an objective is to make sure that the current livelihoods of those communities, over a billion people living in extreme poverty who depend on forest resources for some part of their livelihood, that they don't pay the price, and in fact they are compensated as their forests are conserved. Congratulations. I should have announced the Minister of the Indonesian Ministry of Forestry, whom also we are honored to have on the stage. And let's go.
Thanks very much.
Let me next announce a project to promote full forests and conserve biodiversity by advancing sustainable forest management through creating market opportunities in the musical instrument and in the paper supply chains. This is a big commitment, $481 million over 5 years. I'll invite Tensi Whalen, Executive Director of Forest Alliance, Rainforest Alliance, Jim Kelly, Managing Editor of Time, Henry Juskiewicz, Chairman and CEO of Gibson Guitar Corporation, and Lou Fix, Development Director of Domtor, You're the only one, Tennessee?
They're all taking care of the other generation. Right?
All right. We're happy to have you, Tennessee. Well, this is a project to promote sustainable forest management. The leading U.S. musical instruments company in the United States, Gibson, along with Domtar, the world's second largest paper producer, and Time, Inc., one of the largest publishing companies, are going to develop new goals for scaling up their use of Forest Stewardship Council certified wood products over a five-year period. And they're going to help companies ensure that their suppliers meet responsible forest management standards. Rainforest Action, or Rainforest Alliance, provides a unique forum for helping its partners learn more, and we hope it gets some more partners as a result of this announcement of people and institutions represented in this crowd. Go get them, Tennessee.
I have extra spaces up here for anybody.
And the commitment's going to help Rainforest Alliance achieve its goal of increasing sustainable forest management around the world by 170 million acres within the next 5 years. That would be an increase of over 1.5 times the total area certified to the standards of the Forest Stewardship Council today, enhancing livelihoods and contributed very importantly to avoided deforestation. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is good. Super.
Thanks.
A couple more. I want to recognize in the audience Carl Gander and Keith Schneider, nonprofit organization Circle of Blue. You're out there. I saw you before. Circle of Blue, they have committed to dramatically expand an international network of journalists, scholars, and grassroots organizers to bring attention to the global freshwater crisis. Freshwater likely to be an early casualty of climate change, the earliest probably. They're going to use storytelling as a tool to help generate the civic will, technology, and resources to help solve it. You can applaud. This is, I like this. Billy Parrish is so committed to the climate issue that he dropped out of Yale in 2002. I never thought of that, Billy. It went on to spark a powerful student movement on behalf of a clean, efficient, just, and renewable energy future. The student coalition that he coordinates, the Energy Action Coalition, is working with over 400 groups to commit to scale up their efforts and create the first ever a youth summit on climate. Congratulations. Thank you all. Okay.